A senior climate advisor with the Pacific Community says a recently released study on climate-induced tuna migration will boost the region's negotiations at COP26 in Glasgow. Released on Friday, the study entitled Warming Waters Threaten Tuna-Dependent Economies in the Pacific was carried out by Conservation International and a consortium of technical agencies. The research found that if global warming continues unabated within 30 years, the tuna catch will likely decline by 20% in the waters of Pacific countries. In this third of a multi-part series, I'm joined by a panel of experts from some of the collaborating organizations. Here they are again introducing themselves.
I'm happy to start. I'm Johan Bell. I'm the Senior Director for Tuna Fisheries at Conservation International.
I'm happy to go next. I'm Coral Pasisi. I'm the Senior Advisor to the Director General of SPC.
Hi, Karoi. My name is Simon Nicol. I am the Principal Fisheries Scientist at the Pacific Community and Team Leader for the Fisheries and Ecosystem Monitoring Program.
Hi, first day lover.
Hey, kia ora. Might as well jump in now. I'm Hugh Walton. I am the Chief Technical Advisor for the Oceanic Fisheries Management Project for the Pacific Island Forum Fisheries Agency.
Now, if you missed parts one and two of this panel, head on over to our website, rnzi.com, click on Pacific Waves and check out our episodes from the 31st of July and the 3rd of August. Picking up from where we left off, I asked the SPC's Coral Pasisi if this latest data just signifies an additional climate change burden on Pacific countries.
Yes, it's more bad news, unfortunately. But I think what's really important is it's much clearer news. And the way in which the whole UNFCCC climate change convention discussions are informed is by having accurate science that is very thorough and has gone through a robust process of consideration. Without that data, without having that evidence, it's very difficult to negotiate an understanding of the exact loss and damage that Pacific countries and islands will sustain as a direct result of climate change. When we have this kind of evidence at hand, it enables the negotiators from the Pacific to argue very strongly within the climate change convention process that this is the amount of damage that is happening in this space on top of all of the other major challenges that we face as countries. And as was articulated by Hugh, being the most vulnerable and having all these impacts without having contributed much to this cause at all puts us in a position to start seeking the necessary resources to help alleviate wherever possible these impacts, whether it's to support countries switch their livelihoods to build resilience as necessary, but also fundamentally to call on global partners to increase their ambition to meet the actual Paris Agreement targets because the consequences of not doing that are starting to become very, very clear, both from a financial perspective in the potential losses of economic revenues, but also from a non-financial element as well. Heaps of our culture and tradition is tied, and food security is tied to the ocean and the health of both its oceanic and coastal resources, and both stand to suffer significantly. So we have to be able to articulate exactly what that is going to look like, both in economic and non-economic terms, in order to be able to argue for the resources and the necessary ambition to address that.
Naka, what has the study found about what can be done to prevent or mitigate or help Pacific countries cope with the seemingly inevitable changes to the tuna migration given climate change impacts?
Roy, Johan here. I think the whole purpose of the study was really to answer the question you've just asked, because we think it was very important to be able to identify pathways. You know, this is such an important issue. You know, what can possibly be done about it? And I think based on what Coral has just said, the whole approach to addressing all forms of climate justice, all climate justice issues around the world, is actually to reach that aspirational target of 1.5 degrees Celsius warming by the end of the century. This is a huge climate justice issue. So the first pathway, as Coral has said, is for the world to mobilise, to make the commitments, to have the ambition to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees C. We do have a second pathway, which I think we should also pursue vigorously in case the progress towards 1.5 degrees is not as rapid as it should be. And that is to empower the countries to go and negotiate through the Western and Central Pacific Fisheries Convention, because that convention is based on some very, very strong principles: international cooperation, sustainability, and, you know, considering the rights of small developing states. And I think what this paper does is it starts to launch that process. The paper, you know, acknowledges that, look, there's still uncertainty remaining in this modelling. As Simon has said, it's got better and better and better, but we can all point to ways in which the modelling can be improved. And the investments need to be made now to really reduce uncertainty in the modelling so that we can position those countries to go and negotiate internationally in a way where nobody could poke a hole in their argument in the sense that they could say, well, you know, you're not actually using the best modelling. We want to equip them to be able to do the best modelling and to negotiate effectively.
Vinaka Johan, we'll leave it there for now and come back again tomorrow to hear from more panellists. Tomorrow I ask how Pacific Island nations will get distant water fishing nations to accept this as a climate justice issue.